Howdy, folks. This is Big Kev, your most excellent host of the Roots Rock Revolution. And you lucky folks, you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM HD1. Check us out. You'll love it.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 6 p.m. on a Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Heen, backed up by the most talented team on radio. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the Moth Storytelling Organization held their annual Grand Slam, which is where they invite past Story Slam winners to come and tell a brand new story. And we're going to kind of recreate that evening today because we've rounded up several of the same storytellers to share the stories they told at the Grand Slam. So we got a lot of stories to get to today, so let's get right to them. Well, now we're going to hear from Melissa Lily Groman. Lily lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and she attends Iliff School of Theology, where she's pursuing a Master of Theological Studies. Lily is a technical writer in IT, and she enjoys the standard suite of outdoor mountain activities. Her goal is to share as much love as possible with as many people as possible for as long as possible. Well, Lily, that's a good goal, and thank you for being our guest here on So What's Your Story?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're in Colorado now. You're living there, is it?
Yes, we moved in 2020, okay. Part of the Great Migration.
But you must have told a story in Houston somewhere along the line at the Moth.
Well, so at the Moth, you always tell a new story. The story that I told that I won with in November of 2019 was when we were doing it at Warehouse Live.
Right.
And that was the story of how I lost my Southern accent.
Oh.
That's a fun story too. This one I developed, this experience happened after I moved to Colorado, but I developed it specifically for the Grand Slam on Wednesday.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I was there, I heard it, and it went over great. So let's hear the story.
Awesome. Thank you. 1 week before my 46th birthday, I woke to two missed phone calls from my baby daddy's wife. And when I called back, she answered before the phone even rang. And through tears, she said, they found Jim Bob unresponsive. He's on life support. And they said, there's no real hope. Now, when I met him 26 years prior to that phone call, he introduced himself as JB, which is important because I did not sleep with a man who calls himself Jim Bob. He was the most amazing man. He had cascading black wavy hair, a smile that could light up a room, the kind of charisma that made everyone he met an instant lifelong friend. He had eyes as deep and rich as the fertile earth. I got pregnant. And of course, we didn't make it. It's not that kind of love story. We were young and dumb. And at first, I nurtured a vitriolic bitterness that threatened to destroy everyone involved. The lies, the betrayals, the other women, the disappearing and not reappearing for months. I held it all close to heart and I stewed over it until one day, a friend stopped me mid-rant and she said, you know, Lily, you don't have to be angry. You know that, right? Well, that blew me away because frankly, I didn't know that. It was the only way I knew how to respond to difficult things. And it marked the first in a series of choices in my life to be loving instead of being right. It wasn't easy. He didn't magically change. Instead, we found ourselves working through the difficulties as friends. Mm-hmm. Against all odds, his mom became one of my best friends. After Hurricane Katrina destroyed his home, my husband and I invited him to come and live with us, and he did for a while. And it didn't work out. We had to ask him to move out. He drank too much. And we found a way to walk through it together, and we found the grace to be loving and respectful and give each other dignity as we did. Mm. Later, when he met and married his amazing wife, he asked for my blessing, and I gave it joyfully, and I even buttoned up the bustle at her wedding.
Wow.
That kind of love story. 3 days before my 46th birthday, we gathered to say goodbye. After a lifetime of looking for the edge, JB had slipped right over. They found opiates, amphetamines, and fentanyl in his system. And as I looked around at the crushed hearts in that room, his wife reeling and devastated, his mother shocked into silence, his daughter broken by his absence, I thought, what can love possibly have to do with any of this? Mm-hmm. It's all fine and good to be woo-woo, lovey-lovey. What does love have to do with this grief and devastation and destruction? And then his wife, Beth, grabbed a chair and dragged it to his bedside. She clambered onto it and then climbed up beside him. She swept his gray hair out of his eyes. She leaned in and kissed his cheek. And for just a second, she allowed herself to take comfort from the last of his scent, from the last beats of his heart that she would hear. And then, in a move that would make Christ himself marvel, she invited me to do the same.
Wow.
To kiss her husband, to twine her husband's silver hair in my fist and bury my face in his neck and wail, to truly mourn. JB envisioned a family where we all loved each other, which is a bizarre enough concept. Somehow it just worked. Somehow it just worked. What should have been a nest of complaints and anger and petty cruelty became some of the most rewarding relationships of my life. The night before I stepped into my new life, we gathered to say goodbye as a family, 60 or 70 of his closest friends and family, at a local VFW, and we shared stories about this man that we all loved. Hmm. The man who adopted the local feral cat so he'd have a smoking buddy. The guy who liked to collect and rehabilitate broken wild things, who was growing a shroom farm under his stairs at the time of his death. A guy who loved and laughed and screwed things up just like the rest of us. And as I listened to these stories, and I saw the love in this room, suddenly it hit me. In spite of our very worst mistakes, no, in the presence of our worst mistakes, our most foolish choices, our most dangerous behaviors, love showed up, and it created something more beautiful and enduring than any of us could have imagined on our own.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I knew freedom for the first time. I realized I was never responsible to get it right. He was never responsible to do the right thing or make the right choice. That was never our job. Our job was to show up and love and let love do the rest. Mm. And in that, I can't screw this up. Thank you.
Wow. Well, that is a very heart-rending story there, Lily.
Thank you. Sometimes I feel like he's still here talking to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's real or not, but I miss him. And sometimes I wonder if we could have known this before, would it have helped?
Mm-hmm.
Addiction is a horrific disease, and I don't know that it would have, but I know that the clarity of that moment of liberation has set my life on a completely different course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become a little bit of a mantra. I can't mess this up. I can't.
Wow. Well, when you've been that intimate with someone, ordinarily, once it ends, you know, it's over with. I mean, I've been through it. Most of us have been through that scenario. But it's fascinating how even after it ended, you had this connection with him and still continues to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. He became one of my most enduring friends.
Mm-hmm.
He was somebody who knew just how awful I can be and still loved and respected me.
Right.
And that is a profound gift, honestly. Unconditional love is something that very few people get to experience. And it was beautiful. And I'm blessed for it.
Should I ask? I hope this isn't too... Has his family heard you tell this story? I mean, you've told it on stage. Now it will be on the radio. Have they heard it? His wife?
Yes, actually. So I was honored. His wife actually flew into Houston and was there in the audience Wednesday night.
Wow.
Yes.
That is fantastic. I tell you, there was total silence in that auditorium while you were telling that story.
Mm.
Not easy story to tell, so I really appreciate you telling it. So what's going on now in your life?
Well, I start my second quarter of grad school here pretty soon, and my pastor has just asked me last week before the month, so 2 weeks ago, she asked me if I would preach on the week after Christmas, which... I'm still waiting to be struck by lightning. This is not where I expected my life to go. But I said yes. So I'll be preaching my first sermon, actually.
Wow, that's exciting.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you, Lily, and your new future there. And thanks so much for telling that story. Before we let you go, I understand you have a blog. And what was the name of your blog again, Lily?
It's mslily.substack.com.
What is that about?
So I use my blog both as a place to think out my homework as I'm doing it in school, and also as a place to just explore theological ideas that occur to me.
Well, keep up the great work, and thanks again for being our guest.
All right, thank you.
Well, now we're going to hear from Rosemary Guzman Hook. Rosemary has been telling tales through her blog, writingsbyrosemary.com, and on stages in Texas, California, and London. The story she'll be telling today is called A Pest Control Affair, and this story was also produced into a one-act play and is sponsored by a pest control corporation. Hey, Rosemary, welcome. Thanks for being our guest on So What's Your Story?
Oh, thank you, Eric. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah, well, I saw your story at the Moth the other day, and I tell you, the audience was just enraptured from beginning to end. It's a great story. I don't want to give too much away, but I just want to say it takes quite a storyteller to take a subject like cockroaches and make an enticing story out of it. So without further ado, could we hear your story, the one you told that night?
I would love to tell it. The first time I saw a Texas tree roach in the kitchen, we had only been married a month. My husband, Hook, was an entomologist, someone who studied insects for a living. His reverence of nature is why I fell in love with him. But I never assumed that this adoration extended to the prehistoric cockroach. Certainly, I never would have agreed to move out of my lovely bug-free home and into his wild insect kingdom, except he lived only 1 mile from the university where we both worked. And he had promised two things. The first, I was to do whatever was needed to make his house my home. and he promised to take care of those cockroaches. I suggested pest control. He said no. Several months and several cockroaches later, we're sitting down to watch a movie. I'm on the sofa. He's in his man chair. From my peripheral vision, I sense some movement onto the sofa. I look over and I come flying off of that sofa, hooks out of his man chair. He's now kneeling in front of the sofa. He has whipped off the cushions and he is reaching inside the crevices with his hands, searching for this mammoth cockroach. Within seconds, he stands up like a warrior and says, "I've got it." And this huge cockroach is just wriggling inside of the palm of his hands, trying to get out. Hook walks out the front door and over to a pile of leaves in the yard where he gently tosses in that cockroach, almost as if to say, "Now go out and play." As he's walking back towards me, I'm asking, "Did you kill it? Did you kill it, honey?" He ignores my questions and says only, "He was a leaf cutter." I don't even know what that is. But realization is setting in. I don't think he's ever going to take care of these cockroaches. By the next morning, I make an executive decision. I call and I secretly order pest control. I explain to the pest people, top secret, entomologists in the house, account only in my name, decimate all of the cockroaches. But I'm quick to say, leave unharmed and untouched all ant piles, all wasp nests, and all spider webs, both outside and inside. The pest control people remind me that every time there's a new treatment coming up, they will mail to the house a yellow reminder card. And I say, "Oh, no, 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 no. Absolutely no paper trail. Everything must be online."
Right.
"No problem," they say. Well, Hook and I begin living a cockroach-free existence. Until one Monday after work, I walk into our home. My husband is seated at the dining room table. He's got an odd look on his face. I walk over to give him a kiss. Hello. He leans back, refusing his lips. He looks me directly in the eyes. "Do you have something that you want to tell me?" I start shaking my head, no. Then he pushes this yellow 3x5 card across the table. It's from the pest control company. And now the real questioning begins.
Ooh.
"How long has this been going on? How many times has he been here? Did you let him inside of the house?" And then he stands up and he begins pacing and he's saying in a very elevated voice, "I cannot believe that you would do this to me. You have embarrassed me in front of my colleagues. I will never be able to hold my head up again."
Ooh.
I'm a little bit confused. And so I half laugh as I say, "Well, honey, it's not like you found out I posed nude for Playboy or something." And he yells across the room, "That would have been better." And now he's gone back to pacing and he's saying, "You have to cancel them. You have to cancel them." And I will not. And now it's my turn to shout across the room, "It's either me or the cockroaches." My husband gives me a look that lets me know he is not going to be choosing me.
Ooh.
Hook stayed hurt that whole week because I had failed to comprehend that he was a purist. You don't kill any bug unless you're going to study it and publish a paper about it for a science journal. Well, by Saturday at the end of that week, we were scheduled to go to some friends of his, another entomologist and a botanist, two scientists that he held in very high esteem. All the way to their house, he kept saying, "Now don't say the words pest control or cockroach."
Oh.
But I'm a slow learner. So those are exactly the words that I say. And you know what? They have pest control too.
Ah.
The next morning, it's Sunday. My husband's back to sitting at that dining room table with an odd look on his face again. I walk over to give him a kiss. Good morning. He kisses me back. Okay, he says. You can call the pest control people and tell them that they can still keep coming. But I want you to tell them that they're only to spray inside, not outside.
Hmm.
You want me, I say, to call pest control and tell them to put the toxins inside, but not outside. Yes, he says.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kill us, save the bugs. Anything else. He says, promise me that you'll call. And I'm like, honey, look me in the eye. I absolutely will call them. And I keep my word. First thing Monday morning, I walk into my office. I pick up that phone. I dial the pest control people. And I tell them, don't ever send another one of those yellow reminder cards again. And that's my story.
I love that. Now let's talk a little bit about, they turned that story into one-act play. Did I read that right?
Yes. So there is an event in Austin, Frontier Fest.
Uh-huh.
And it goes on for, I think, almost an entire month. And these are 25-minute slots where you can have a one-act play. So I wrote a one-act play about a pest control affair.
So are you the actress in the play or...
I'm not really an actor, and it's not really an avenue that I'm interested in pursuing. Huh. So I did hire a cast. So I had a cast of five people.
Tell us about your blog a little bit. What is it?
So far, the majority of my stories have to do with my late husband, Hook.
Hmm.
So ours was
your late husband, Hook.
My late husband. Oh my gosh. So actually the blog started back in 2012, because we were planning to go to Australia for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we had already rented a house there. We were all set to go. We were in the middle of packing when the call came that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
so we kind of moved from planning a life overseas to planning to save his life.
Oh, Rosemary.
And then the blog then turned into, because it was only going to be a 1 year travel blog. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into sort of a life blog of keeping people informed about what was going on so uh-huh. that we didn't have to, you know, try to respond to 100 different messages.
Uh-huh.
And then it became a lifeline for me after he died, because, you know, he was young, you know,
and it's still going now after all these years.
Now it's my platform. It was originally Hooks Down Under, and it's now Writings by Rosemary. So now I tell our story through essays, through stand up.
Well, I got a feeling he would love these stories.
Well, you know, all of these, I tell them funny, but when they happened, they were not funny, because uh-huh. This pest control, this was the biggest argument we ever had.
Well, what do they say? Humor is pain times distance. So,
oh, there you go. I mean, I will say that it's a way I feel to honor him. So it was also very educational for me. He wouldn't have liked it, but he would have respected it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Rosemary, you keep up the great work here. You're a delightful storyteller, and maybe we'll hear from you again sometime.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Eric. I really appreciate letting me come and chat for a bit. And, you know, I have to keep it. I have to keep the humor in there, because otherwise it's too sad.
Right. That's a great way to look at it. And thanks again for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, our next guest today is Bonke. Bonke has degrees in drama and African American studies from the University of Virginia and shares her talent with the Mayor's Office for Adult Literacy as their social media specialist. Her work as an education activist got her an invitation to President Barack Obama's White House and features in Ebony and Women's Health. Bonke is a proud auntie, sister, and future trophy wife.
Yes.
Those are your words, not mine. Bonke, you were at the Moth Grand Slam here in Houston last week and gave a great story, and we'd love to hear that story.
Well, I would love to tell it. Hello, everyone. My story starts with heartbreak, as many stories do. life with its twists and turns and the different things that we want can end in heartbreak. For me, I am someone, I have two sides. I'm either easygoing, floating on a breeze, or I have a plan. And God forbid if that plan does not work out exactly as I match. So in 2020, my heart was broken. The pandemic disrupted all of our plans. And a particular plan that I had in place for 5 years was the release of my sophomore novel, New Black. And it just completely broke my heart. I was disappointed is an understatement. And for me, the worst part is I was embarrassed. I am somebody who, again, if I have a plan, I want results. I work for them. I like to win, and to lose in such a public way, it felt like a divorce, like a termination, like a bankruptcy, like the worst thing. It's like your dirty drawers being outside for the world to see. So then I decided if my laundry was going to be out, then I might as well do comedy. Because as you guys know, comedy is just telling the truth, no filter and no shame. At first, it's such a release. It's such a blessing to get on stage and just let it all out and not expect any result. I'm just doing this for fun. But within a month, I started getting paid gigs. So again, I go from floating on that breeze to now I have a plan. And that plan culminates in a 7-city tour, which I was calling my world tour, because it was also going on the World Wide Web. So it was technically a world tour, but really it was 7 cities along the East Coast, kicked off in Houston, and from Houston, Atlanta, Charlotte, Virginia Beach, Richmond, DC, Philly, Mecca of comedy, New York City. So this whole time, I'm having these split minds, right? On one hand, I'm floating on a breeze. I'm having a ball in each city. On the other hand, I am carefully executing this plan. I am my own tour manager, my own booking agent. I'm doing all my social media in real time. I mean, I'm very fabulous. So the outfit selection is mwah, makeup, hair. I am all the things. So when I get to New York City, I'm equally excited and exhausted. And New York City is an exhausting place, okay? Walking for miles on end, up and down the subway tracks, I mean, from Queens to Manhattan to Brooklyn. So the day of my second gig, which the first one was, because New York City, they are a tough audience and they are opinionated. So you may be used to doing your set a particular way, but now it's going to go in 20 different directions as 20 different people are chiming in. You know, if they're a friendly crowd, they're chiming in to help. And if they're not friendly, they're chiming in to crush your spirits. So the second day, I am, I see a store. It feels like an oasis in this desert of concrete jungle. I go in and I purchase a gummy. And a part of me is like, the structured plan part, right? Don't do this. We have to kill this gig. The flowy part is like, f*** it. And f*** it prevailed. And f*** it is what went on stage. It was a colossal fail. But it was also kind of what I needed to be reminded that at the end of the day, comedy is a world of jokes. And the whole point is to not take myself so serious.
Wow. So what prompted this whole comedy tour, you say, was when you had the disappointment with the book, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like you took that hit too hard. I mean, you said it wasn't a bestseller or something. Why did
it wasn't a bestseller? It's so funny you say that. I am actively working to kill my perfectionist spirit, right? It's something that has caused me, if I'm being all the way transparent, it's caused me a lot of unnecessary misery, grief over something that, like you said, is with anything, right? I could look at it as, wow, I'm a published author. My second novel is coming out. This work is anticipated. Wow. It's financed, all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And instead it's like, I'm not a bestseller. And that was where my mind was. It was bestseller or bust. So I felt like a bust.
But you know, Bonke, there's no shortage of best-selling Nobel Prize-winning writers who could wallpaper their houses with their first rejection slips.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a very, very good company there.
For sure. For sure. And that's what I've learned. And that's why I bring up the whole winning or not winning, because this is something that this whole experience, right, this journey of the last 4 years has taught me, which is, if you're in the game, you're in the game. There is no winning or failing, you know? But again, it's been a very painful lesson to learn.
Well, how's the writing going now? Or have you taken it up again? I hope you haven't given it up.
I haven't given it up. But what I realize is I pivot a lot. But the common denominator is people and words. I get to express myself through words and connect to people in these various ways. And who knows what the next pivot will be. And I am definitely open to it. So,
right. Well, maybe they kind of play off on each other. The comedy can fuel the writing, which fuels the comedy.
For sure.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Bonke, how can our listeners learn more about you and what you do?
Yes, I would love to connect more. You can find me on all social media at Bonke, the author. Bonke is spelled B-A-N-K-E, bank with an E, Bonke, the author. That's me. That's Instagram, Facebook, X, Threads, all the good things. If you go to BonkeTheAuthor.com, you can purchase New Black.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would get a signed copy. And because of the holidays, it will come to you beautifully wrapped like this.
Wow. BonkeTheAuthor.com.
Yes.
Well, we'll get Sounds the word like- out on that, Bonke. Thanks again for being our guest, and good luck to you in all your endeavors.
Thank you. Good night.
We're going to take a break from our program now for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM radio in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Our show is sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild puts on various storytelling events throughout the year, including monthly story swaps, the fourth Tuesday of every month. To find out more about the Guild and maybe even join their organization, you can go to HoustonStorytellers.org. And while you're at that same website, you can check out our program. Just click on the So What's Your Story tab, and you'll find archives from our show dating all the way back to the year 2008. And we're also on Facebook. Just go to So What's Your Story on Facebook and find out all the latest happenings there. And don't forget our friends at the Moth Storytelling Organization, who we are featuring on our show today. The Moth holds monthly story slams the second Tuesday of every month at the Warehouse Live Midtown on Travis Street. Their next story slam will be January 9th, and the theme for the stories that evening will be first impressions. And now let's get back to our program, where we are featuring storytellers who performed at the Moth's Grand Slam just a couple of weeks ago. Well, our next guest is no stranger to this program. It's Dr. Sneha Desai. Sneha was born in Singapore, raised in India, and moved to the U.S. to go to school. She's a clinical psychologist, but she also dabbles in modeling, and she's an actress in several movies. And I think it's safe to say that you are a TikTok sensation. Hey, Sneha, thanks for being our guest on So What's Your Story?
Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
I wanted to ask you about this TikTok. Are you getting like millions of views and stuff? What's going on there?
Well, it started off during the pandemic when I didn't have much to do. And my dog and I wanted to create memories together. So I took a lot of videos of him. And then I started posting them on TikTok. And because he's kind of funny looking, I think that people were attracted to him. And the followers kept coming. So then I decided that maybe I should start my own TikTok account as well.
Ah.
And so I have one account that is for Coda, my dog, Coda the Canine Yoda. And then I have another account that is just for me. My dog makes some special appearances, but most of it is poking fun at my husband.
Yes, I've noticed that. Now, Sneha, today we are sort of recreating, a couple weeks ago, you'll recall, the Moth held their Grand Slam, and you were in it. And so we've gotten together some of the storytellers from that evening to hear their stories. Now, could we hear yours today?
Okay, so this story is about the time when it was my second year at Wright State University, and I was the coolest international student on campus because I had a car. Ooh. And it was not just any car. It was a black two-door car with a spoiler. Mm. And one evening, my two roommates and I received a rather late notice from the apartment complex that we needed to leave the apartment and remove everything that was fabric from it by 7 a.m. because pest control was coming in. Actually, three roommates and I. Mm. And because I was such a cool student, I had a lot of outfits to sort through, which took me all night. At 6 a.m., one of my roommates had already left to go to her friend's house, and the other two roommates that were still at the apartment, I told them that I could drive them to campus so we could continue to maybe sleep in the lounge there because we had pretty much been up all night trying to sort all of this out. Mm. And now campus was only a 10-minute walk and maybe a couple-minute drive. Mm-hmm. But because I had this fancy two-door car that I loved showing off because I was so cool, I offered to drive them. Now, the problem with that was that the back seat of my car was completely full of my stuff. So I could only drive one passenger at a time. Mm. And my roommate, Nitya, was the first one to volunteer. Now, on our way to campus, I did not see any rain. I did not see any traffic. I certainly did not see anyone looking at me driving this fancy car. I did not see any oncoming cars as I turned left onto University Drive. But just because I did not see any of this doesn't mean that it didn't exist. Mm. All of that existed. And in the pouring rain, a car slammed into the passenger side of my car. Mm. And my car spun, the airbags deployed, and I heard a loud thud, which was the sound of Nitya's forehead making violent contact with the windshield. Oof. Now, it turns out that she had pushed her seat so much to the front because of all my cool possessions that she could not reach the seatbelt and had chosen not to wear it that day.
Oh, boy.
So pedestrians that I had not noticed before immediately came running to asking us if we were okay. And I was like, this is not the type of attention that I was trying to attract. And when Nitya started mumbling some nonsense to these pedestrians, they decided to take her phone and they called the last dialed number, who happened to be a classmate, another international student who we barely knew. But Nitya had called last night, the night before, to ask if she could leave her one suitcase in his apartment. Mm. I, on the other hand, called my boyfriend, who worked a full-time job 4 hours away, and he told me he would start driving to me right away. I also called my other roommate, who was at her friend's place, to let her know what had happened, my third roommate. And she didn't have a car, and her friend's place was far away. Mm-hmm. So she told her friend that they needed to drive to campus right away to check on me. The friend's boyfriend had a car, so the friend tried to contact her boyfriend. The boyfriend was in the shower, so she kept banging on the door saying, come out, come out. And the boyfriend's like, do you want me to come out naked? And so there was all sorts of commotion happening while I called my other friend as well.
Wow.
Meanwhile, someone called the ambulance, and the ambulance arrived after a few minutes, and we got carried into it one by one. And I was the last one to get in. And as they put me on the stretcher with all the rain slamming my face, I saw through the corner of my eye the guy who had been called from Nitya's phone, huddled under one umbrella with two other men, I'm guessing his roommates. He had somehow made it to the crash site on foot because they didn't have any cars either, and they appeared clearly very concerned for us. In the ambulance, I get a phone call. It was from Honda, reminding me about my oil change appointment the next day. And before I could even let them know how my heart was literally crushed somewhere on the streets, the EMT worker yelled at me to hang up. And I felt like I was having the worst day of my life because now these international students who didn't have a car saw me in my cool car all damaged and flustered and injured. These pedestrians saw me in a terrible shape. And now this strange man that I've never met in my entire life is yelling at me. Once we get to the hospital, we realize that Nitya was in bad shape. She asked three questions the whole time. Who am I? Where am I? And where is Sneha? Now, don't get me wrong, I was concerned for her. But at the same time, I was also so flattered because, hey, she forgot who she was, but she remembered who I am. And I felt so cool in that moment. Now, that evening, I was discharged soon because I didn't have that many injuries. I did not need to be monitored. So I left Nitya at the hospital with my second roommate. And I went home to my apartment to rest. My boyfriend was already waiting for there. And he took one look at me and decided that I was not cool enough to hang with him because I had burns from the airbag deploying. I had ligament tears and whiplash. And he decided that hanging out with his friends at the strip club was going to be more cool. He left. He left the next day to go back home, and after 48 hours, Nitya showed up at the apartment with her identity crisis fully resolved. She remembered who she was. But over the next 6 months, she continued to lose a lot of hair because of the trauma that she had gone through. Over the same 6 months, my two-door fancy, amazing car with a spoiler got replaced by a white, boring, four-door used Corolla. Now, Nitya and Shiva, the guy under the umbrella, they fell in love. And I found myself single because I dumped the jerk boyfriend that I had for obvious reasons. And I started questioning if I was still cool. Now, over time, Nitya and Shiva got engaged while Nitya and I graduated from just roommates to friends. And one day I told Nitya, "Nitya, I should have asked you to wear your seatbelt that day." And she said, "Yes, Sneha, you should have. But all's well that ends well." And in that moment of forgiveness from Nitya, who was the victim, whose life could have been completely ruined in that one moment the car hit my car, I realized that I had never been the coolest international student on campus, that title had always belonged to someone else.
Wow. Well, that was a life-changing experience, it sounds like.
It was eye-opening. I feel like I grew up very quickly after that, because prior to that, when I look at myself in those years when I thought I was the coolest international student on campus, the one word that comes to my mind is brat. I feel like I was a brat. And I think I grew up and realized that there were other things more important in life, with health being the first one, than just having a fancy car
right.
or fancy outfits.
So it was kind of a tragedy, but you learned from it, made the best of it, it sounds like. How about your friend? What was her name again? Nvidia?
Nitya.
Yeah.
So Nitya and Shiva eventually got married. They have since then moved to India, and they have a son now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Has she heard this story?
He has not heard this story. In fact, I have not shared with her that this story was shared on The Moth. However, 2 weeks before The Moth, I did message her and we talked about this. And I said, Nitya, can you believe what a terrible accident that we were in? And she said the same words that she told me then. She said, Sneha, I am alive and that's all that matters.
Wow. Well, I really hope she hears this story.
I will send it to her.
Yes. Before we let you go, do you have any other projects going on you'd like to talk about? Any movies? Or you're always in something. I can't keep up with them all.
Speaking of that, I was in a commercial that got released on December 14th. That has gone viral on many platforms and also appeared on MSNBC over the weekend.
Is this that Mothers for Democracy one?
It is the Mothers for Democracy commercial.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It was a campaign shot by this group that used to be called Mothers Against Greg Abbott. So they used to be also MAGA. But a different type of MAGA.
Right.
But now they have changed their name to Mothers for Democracy. And they released this commercial advocating for gun reform on the anniversary of the Sandy Hook shooting to kind of address how when any of these tragedies occur, most people are always saying our thoughts and prayers are with the victims, and we kind of pray for the souls to rest in peace or for the families to find some healing in their hearts, but no action is taken.
Right.
So this commercial is highlighting the, I guess, the irony of how people want to wish well, but really no actions being taken.
We need a lot more than just thoughts and prayers.
Certainly.
Well, I really admire your work, Sneha. And thanks so much for being our guest here. And good luck in all you do.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Well, our next guest today is Joanne Williams. Joanne is a ceramic artist and former art therapist living in Marfa, Texas. She plays the surdu drum in a samba reggae group called Batala Mundo. Hey, Joanne, thanks for being our guest here on So What's Your Story?
Thanks.
What exactly does a surdu drum sound like?
It's a big drum that you wear around your waist and you dance with it. And it's the bass line for the other drumming that goes on. It's Brazilian. It's Brazilian drumming, dance drumming.
Okay. It's reggae.
It's samba reggae. It's called samba reggae, not Bob Marley. It's called samba reggae, and it's a very unusual and incredible percussion band, marching kind of thing, dancing. It's just crazy fun.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to Google that. Now,
yeah, you know.
Joanne, you appeared at the Moth Grand Slam. It's been about a week now, and you told a story, went over great, and we'd like to hear that story on our program. Could you tell it to us?
Sure. Pasta. The one constant on the menu at our house was pasta. If we had chicken fried steak, Dad would say, "Where's the pasta?" Pot roast accompanied by pasta. Cottage ham and beans, you got it. Side dish pasta. Dad was a vibrant second-generation Italian married to my mom, a North Texas prairie girl, who was as proud of his heritage as he was. She was always trying to cook Italian. Once after a large family picnic, we all came down with food poisoning. My mother, her sisters, considered every culprit food item at length. I remember the phone conversations. Was it the ham? Aunt Bess's famous German potato salad? The banana pudding? Listening to them discuss it made me nauseous. My suspicion of food lingered well into my teen years. My mom spent an inordinate time trying to convince me and my sister to eat. We were discerning diners bordering on starvation. Mom would come up with a novel item each afternoon after school to entice an appetite. She found the first yogurt known to man available in 1960 at a health food store and stirred a jar of strawberry jam into it way before Dannon thought of that one. She presented us our first avocado, which the health food store clerk said was a complete food, and then, exasperated, set me down one afternoon and popped a beer in front of me because Aunt Mimi said it always made her hungry. I didn't buy it. I was ambivalent about food. There was plenty of it, but I was never really hungry. At UT Austin, as an art major in 1969, I ate dorm food to survive. I met an art student, Casey, who lived with his best friends, a married couple, Chester and Sandra. They were macrobiotics, and I was fascinated. I moved right in. I was so completely infatuated with Casey that if he said we were going to eat snake, I might have agreed. But we ate according to macrobiotics. We ate brown rice, lots of brown rice at every meal, and according to the seasons. Long grain for summer, short grain for winter. I learned that to balance yin and yang through the principles of macrobiotics would cure everything, physically and mentally. Some of the vegetables were particularly vicious. Spinach was considered a dessert. Seaweed was served if you were lucky. Chewing was a chore, as you were supposed to chew each bite 100 times, and I kid you not. Vegan pales by comparison. The biggest sacrifice was flavor. It seemed noble, but also dutiful, like a penance, because cooking this way took all day, a full-time job, and it didn't deliver flavor. There was constant roasting, grinding, stirring, mashing, stirring at the stove into large pots with long wooden spoons. When it was my turn to stir, Casey would wrap his arms from the back around my waist or hold back my long hair into a ponytail, which made me kind of swoon. Or was it the lack of nutrition? Eating this way, I became so thin I was almost emaciated. Casey, too, began to notice how little energy he had, and Sandra developed an ectopic pregnancy that almost killed her because she honestly felt she could resolve it through macrobiotics. Wow. I didn't even attend my own graduation because I was starving. I was listless. My diploma came through the mail. I swear it was the closest I ever came to being in a cult. And one night I had a dream about a baked potato with melting butter. Oh. I confessed my fears to Casey that I really couldn't choke down another bowl of brown rice. He admitted he couldn't either. He also said that he was secretly going to go on what he termed a micropsychotic diet. He wanted a hamburger. Our pillow talk became about what foods we missed the most, and it was like an aphrodisiac. I think I said I missed pasta, but that was probably just an easy answer. We were bad. I love this man, and I wanted to cook for this man, cook those things we missed, things that I chose. And my mom was thrilled when early into our marriage, I called her for some recipes. She said, "You're cooking?" On a trip home, I got to bring back the old wooden family recipe box. Most were handwritten in her pencil hand onto index cards, stained, of course. I carried them back to our house in my lap, and as I thumbed through them, I discovered most were recipes for pasta. That's it.
Wow. Good story. Good. Yeah, I love the lightheartedness of it. I mean, it, so that macrobiotic diet? Yeah.
Flavorless. It was like regimen. It was like a punishment.
Sounds like it almost killed you.
Almost killed a lot of people, I think.
Okay.
And the idea was to provide longevity through balance, through yin and yang. But
it's one of them things that makes life seem like it's longer.
Yeah. And I thought, man, if I didn't like eating before, I really didn't like it now.
So had you done that before, that kind of storytelling in front of a big audience? Or is that the first time?
Well, no. The first time I told my a story was at the Moth. After my husband died about 11 years ago, I decided I would challenge myself with something every year that I would never have done on my own.
Sure, good idea.
And one was to stand up in a group of people, in front of a bunch of people that I didn't know, and tell something very personal. And
wow.
I know, it just terrified me. But I was doing that. I had dove into a dark cave, swam, and then walked for about 3 miles. That was a terrifying thing. I got through it. Then I would fly on a transatlantic flight to Europe by myself, not knowing where I was going. I did that. And so This was just another challenge that I did because it was hard for me. We were married for over 40 years. So it was hard for me to be without a person that was, you know, I grew up with, basically. I just thought I needed to do something to keep something going. Yeah, I didn't want to be the weeping widow, you know.
It's very admirable, and it's also producing some pretty good stories for you, I'd say.
Yeah, it has. And although I have tried in many instances not to have them focus around Casey, the two most important stories that I have developed have been around Casey. Yeah.
So how was your experience at the Moth Grand Slam? Was it pretty positive for you?
Yeah, it was amazing. I thought, oh my God, here we go again. And it felt a little more elevated than the usual story slam. You know, it was an invaluable experience, the whole thing to it. I think it touched a lot of people. Mm-hmm. People really were responding to it. I was so surprised.
I was there.
I think my story went a little bit longer because I was just kind of shocked with the response I was getting from the crowd. So,
well, that's a good thing.
It was a nice experience. And the other people were amazing. The stories were incredible. And the way they told them, just so, so excellent.
Right. I was there. It was a good night.
Oh, you were good.
Okay, Joanne. Well, I really appreciate you being our guest. Thanks for telling that story. And I hope you keep telling stories.
Well, I might.
Maybe see you up there on stage again.
I got a few more. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is our show for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and I'd like to thank our guests, Melissa Groman, Rosemary Guzman-Hook, Banke Awapetu, Snea Desai, and Joanne Williams. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Eric Heen, and along with the rest of the So It's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
It's 90.1 KPFT. Time to check in with the R&R show.
Like Ronnie says, that's what it takes to make things happen. It's listener-supported, volunteer-driven community, whatever. It's about us, and it's about you.
The community, whatever. Oh, really good. See, this is what happens. You know, guy's been in broadcasting for over 40 years, and it's just like, you know, I'm just not going to say the rest of this bit. We are community, whatever. KPFT, FM 90.
We'll get Howard working on a promo.
I hate to lay this on you. This is already going to be on a promo.
I'm afraid so,
First of
yes.
all, Howard's in the car right now. And
Ever vigilant.
And he has heard this train wreck. And it's going to wind up on a promo, you can bet.
Well, you know.
Normally, it's my stuff, but today, it's all you, babe.
All right, well, I'll take one for the team.
Weekdays 1 till 3 here on KPFT.
You can grit your teeth and get through it.
You don't listen to KPFT to have your opinions confirmed. You turn to us for thought-provoking conversations from people on all sides of the issues. Plenty of other media outlets will give you a partisan echo chamber, but not KPFT. We're not afraid of complicated issues, strong opinions, or heated debates. In fact, we jump into these conversations because we know they help you learn. And we know you're open to hearing something that might challenge your own beliefs. These conversations happen here thanks to the financial support of our listeners. Contribute now to support radio that doesn't shy away from difficult topics or differing opinions. Call or text GIVE to 713-526-5738 or go online to kpft.org.